This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And welcome to the special segment of your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast. Okay, like way before I was covering UT football and living the life here in Austin and hanging out on the lakes and learning about brisket. Back in the day, I actually was an NFL writer. It wasn't actually that long ago, but after covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for several years, working for the Detroit Lions, had some things going on. And I was like, you know what? I don't even want to do this anymore. I'm just going to get out the business. I'm just going to try to do something else. I got a call by a guy named Frank Schwab, who reached out. Okay, he reached out to me. It wasn't a call. It was an email, but whatever. He called eventually. And he talked to me about working for Yahoo. Wasn't sure I was going to do it, but I decided, you know what? What the hell? Can't hurt. Had a fantastic time working with him at Yahoo. Did that for a little bit of time and then eventually transitioned here to cover UT football. But I still have NFL roots. I still am a strength. Schwab is still my guy. And I'm like, you know what? For my podcast, and it's time to talk football. Listen, I know there's some quote unquote big names out there, but I know a guy who covers the NFL arguably better than any of those other guys is on my podcast right now. Frank Schwab from Yahoo and Shutdown Corner, my man. It's been a long time, but how are you doing?
Man, like I got the text today, like, hey, can you do the podcast? I was like, yes, immediately. Like, we miss you, you know, that we don't have as much fun without you because it was a blast, man. It was those were the days. And I remember calling you up like first time. I remember where I was. It was glad it all worked out. And I know you're doing your thing down there and enjoying life in Austin. That's great. Yeah, it was just cool to get that text today and be like, heck yeah, I'm going to be talking to him.
Yeah,
why not? He's my dude.
Yeah, we haven't talked forever. And I mean, like, you know, you guys are doing great. And I am extremely happy. Yeah, I like covering a beat a little bit more than I like being a national guy. I think, you know, sometimes a little bit it's tougher for you guys when you do national stuff because it's hard to do it too deep. On the Buffalo Bills when you're a national guy. It's a little bit tougher. It's a little bit easier.
But I don't know, man. I see it both ways because I've done it both ways. And
yes.
Sometimes, I mean, having the, you know, doing the whole NFL, you get this, you can write about anything any day and you don't know what's coming. And some days on the grind, you know how it is, the beat can be a grind. You're talking about the backup cornerback's ankle injury and, you know, with your end of it, like, oh, this four-star kid decommitted. And it's just, you get so bogged down with minutiae, whereas when you're doing the whole league, it's like, well, hey, I can. What's going to come at me today? Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But usually you figure out, you find some fun stuff to write about when you got all 32 to write about.
Well, before I start asking you football-related questions, let me ask you one important question, which is we're obviously all on self-quarantine right now. You have kids. The question is, have you dropped them off at the fire station and not looked back? Or are they still within the household?
Still here, still going strong. You know, my daughter's 16 now, so it's not much different. She's up in her room watching TikToks all day, whether we're on quarantine or not. So it's really kind of the same, man. No, it's good. We're getting by. This is such a weird time. I mean, guys like me and you, we got family, but we love sports, right? Like we love throwing on a game. Like I'll throw on whatever. Oh, the Clippers are playing the Spurs tonight. Sure, why not? And it's just weird not having that in my life. And, you know, you find other ways. We're watching movies and shows and Tiger King and all that kind of stuff. And you find ways, but it's definitely a different time, man.
So talk to me. Let's start talking about this time here. I mean, clearly we know where we're at. The NFL, they're going to continue with the NFL draft. Some people have complained and voiced their displeasure about that. But at the end of the day, it's going to be, you know, online. You know, it's be up to the teams. I assume there'll be some war rooms or things to that effect, but I'm sure there's social distance and they'll be fine. It's a level playing field. But my question to you is, as a guy who's in the trenches with this whole thing, in your opinion, what will it take for us to have a return to football that we once knew it to be? Last year's football, right? With people in the stands, got, you know, 16 or rather 17 game season. what do you think it will take for that to happen?
You know, and it's interesting because just today, you know, today or yesterday, there was the report about baseball, right? And it was just crazy to read some of the things they were thinking about, like automated strike zone so the umpire could be 6 feet away and players not in the dugout, but they're in like the empty stands, social distancing. And that kind of hit me like, boy, we have a lot of hurdles to get over before anything kind of looks normal. And even if you're talking about, I'll just play in an empty stadium, I think that's easier said than done. There's still a lot of people that go into the production of an NFL game, even without people in the stands. And then you're adding in, at what point are we going to feel okay with 70,000 people kind of crammed next to each other? We've all been to a game. I mean, you're on top of everybody and it's cool. Usually who cares? You know, you might get some beer spilled on you, but now it's a different deal. I don't know. It just seems like, I know this past weekend when Trump came out, he talked to the commissioners and said, we want the NFL to start on time. And it just seemed like it's really optimistic. And then the California governor came out and said that we're not going to, he doesn't anticipate that happening by opening day, at least with people in the crowd. And I'm more trending towards that, where it's just hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine 70,000 people at a game on September 10th. I mean, I hope so, but I think we would have to have widespread testing by then. I don't think a vaccine is reasonable by September. And even then, we're still talking about a lot of logistics. So I would sign up right now for an NFL week one without anybody in the stands. It'd be weird. It'd be different. I know I watched, you know, I didn't watch WrestleMania, but I watched a WWF event, WWE, I guess it is. Before that, I'm not even a wrestling fan, but it was interesting just to see them in this empty studio almost. And it was just kind of weird. And I think it would be the same for the NFL, right? If we watch an NFL game without fans, it's a totally different deal, even just watching on TV. So I don't know. I hope we get games in September, at least, even without fans on the stands, no matter how weird that would be, just because, hey, yeah, the 70,000 people wouldn't be able to go and it would be weird for us, but there's still millions and millions that watch to play fantasy football. So I'm hopeful by September we have something kind of resembling normal NFL.
Yeah, and like you said, it would look like a practice, right? We've been to NFL practices. It would look like that because you wouldn't have, you know, that type of interaction. But then you bring up a point that I've kind of brought up as it relates to college football. It seems to me, without massive testing and consistent testing, and then you still would have to have, like they talked about in Major League Baseball, quarantining players, right? I mean, because essentially, right, you can't take the risk that the guy goes out to, you know, his Kroger or Publix or HEB
exactly.
where he lives and then brings it back into the team, right? So you would have to have a layer of quarantine, right? You would have to have mass testing. And then there's still like the financials of it too, right? Because if we follow the money with this, are owners going to cut checks if they aren't getting paid for those stadiums that, by the way, they didn't pay for, but are owners, but regardless that they're still reaping the benefits for. I mean, like there seems to be so many components, and I know it's still April, but it seems tough to pull off, doesn't it though, Frank?
Right. I mean, because like you were talking about, like, I don't, let's just think about this. You play a game on Sunday, Green Bay Packers, just throw out a team. Green Bay Packers play on Sunday. You've tested them all. They're all fine. And then Sunday night, they, like you said, they go to the grocery store, wherever, you go anywhere. One guy comes in contact with somebody who has it, or he touches the wrong thing or whatever. Now he's got the virus. He comes back on Monday. You're going to test him every day. You know, then you've gone through practice all week, been in the locker room with these guys. That's how viruses work. You know, I mean, this is, when you think of it on that scale, unless you're totally quarantining somebody, which is not, it's just not realistic. You've heard, you know, Major League Baseball players and even their wives saying on Twitter today, like, no, this, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be away from my family for 5 months where you quarantine me to play baseball. So you can't, that's not even realistic. And then you just wonder what point, like, it just seems so tough to imagine that you could control this to where all the players are safe. You're not worried about anything. One guy can't, Rudy Gobert, he, you know, one NFL player catches it. And you basically, wouldn't you have to shut down the whole league? You couldn't say, yes. Aaron Rodgers has coronavirus. We're going to keep playing, though. That doesn't work. Like, I just don't know. There's so many like logical, you go through it in your head and you say, yeah, it's tough to imagine how they're going to do this without, I mean, even with widespread testing, without a vaccine. I mean, or just like, hey, we don't care, whatever, whatever happens, happens, which I can't imagine being the case. So you're right. You bring up a lot of good points. There's a lot of things that need to be figured out.
And isn't it, Frank, last thing on that particular topic, like when we think about coaches, you know, what is their whole thing, the difference between being hurt and injured, right? I mean, can't you able to go? So it's like, do you have a little corona or a lot of corona? Because because we know this, if left in the hands of coaches, they'll throw guys out there. It's just a little corona. He feels fine. We don't even know. I mean, like, you would almost have to take it out, that portion of it, out of the coach's hands 100% completely, and it'd have to be almost an NFL testing, because I feel like if it was just left unto to the coaches, they would just jot everybody out there and not think twice.
Right. You can't trust coaches with anything. Coaches are coaches. They do what they do. We all know. We both know it from being around many of them. But, you know, I mean, and then you get into another layer of this. Okay, let's say you're going to make it an NFL, like, mandated testing, whatever. Are we really going to put those resources into almost constant testing of NFL teams? When are we going to be in a spot by September where the general population is not overrun by this thing, where we can have doctors and tests just for NFL players so we can play football? Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. Like you said, we're only in April. There's 5 months to go before a game is even scheduled. But yeah, there's a lot of things you just think about. Well, what about this? Well, what about when this happens? Or what about how can they do this? And it just, you keep coming back to the same, like, I don't know how they would figure all these things out even in 5 months.
So, as I keep up with stuff, you had an article today on Shutdown Corner about Cam Newton talking about how the coronavirus affected him. You had, I think it was Jason Reed may have tweeted out something about how NFL, you know, personnel execs are worried that how this thing may affect them in the draft. I get that sometimes these guys are answering direct questions, but the backlash that sometimes these athletes and coaches, and, you know, even on college level, because I've tweeted out certain things and about, you know, Tom Herman, and people have been like, people are dying. So, I mean, what is the response? Because at some point, some people are saying, cry me a freaking river, Cam Newton, about, you know, how the coronavirus has affected you. Yeah, guess what? I've lost my job. Or cry me freaking river because I just lost my aunt or my uncle. Like, what should the player response or in personnel response be, where even though we want sports, people, they want to know, talk a little bit about sports, but they don't want to hear, like, the boo-hoo crying portion of it.
Yeah, and it's tough because I read Cam's, and I've always been a Cam guy. I'm not one of these guys that dislikes Cam Newton. And I thought he did the best he could, kind of trying to be gentle about it. But it's a legitimate, like, this is his job. This is his profession. He, you know, he stands to lose millions and millions of dollars if he can't go and get a physical, you know, for his shoulder, for his foot. And that is a serious thing. Like, that's not a nothing. Like, that we're not just talking about, hey, this is this guy's hobby and whatever. No, this is his profession. This is his career, and it's being affected. And he's allowed to be selfish about, hey, this is affecting me and that bothers me. Yeah, but to the point of there's always going to be like, well, somebody's got it worse than you. So I don't know. I don't know what these guys can say or do to kind of. I agree. There are some things that are like. Like, NFL general managers should not be complaining right now. Like, so you got to do your interviews with guys on Zoom instead of in person. Oh, well. Like, you'll get through it. That'll be okay. But, like, when we're talking about guys and they're, you know, losing their jobs, their careers in sports, you know what? Yeah, I know Cam Newton's made a lot of money, but that doesn't mean he should, you know, it's out of line for him to worry about kind of having his career affected in a big time way. I'm okay with Cam Newton, but he says it and everybody's gonna, you know, one up him. Oh, I got it worse than you. So I don't know. There's a gentle kind of deal where these guys are having serious, you know, I mean, real life, you know, that this is affecting your life in a real way, but yet they can't say it because nobody feels sorry for Cam Newton or any other athlete. So it is a tough deal. And I thought You know, I wrote about this a couple of days ago, Shelby Harris, a defensive tackle for the Broncos. He's kind of been he's one of these guys. He's been a journeyman his whole career. He's kind of really done a great job to stick around in the league and make himself a starter last year for the Broncos. Had a good year. Was supposed to get a pretty good contract on the market, and he signed for 1 year, $3.5 million, and everybody was surprised. He didn't get really paid like he thought he would. And Shelby was on a teleconference with the Broncos media and said basically, hey, I'm just happy to have a job. I can still provide for my family. I can still, you know, millions of people are losing their jobs. I still have a job, so nobody's going to cry for me making $3.5 million. And I thought that was really smart and also a little bit jarring that, wow, these athletes really are aware that this thing is bigger than them.
So, you know, with the draft, you know, coming up, and I think we all will like a live sporting event of some sort to watch. Like, you know, here in Austin, just a couple of days ago, they replayed the national championship game with, you know, Texas versus USC. Yeah. And like that was, even though it happened years ago, I mean, it was the thing that everyone was talking about. We had a live thread on our message board. I mean, it was tweeted about. Like, it was a major thing. Former players were talking about it, so on and so forth. So the draft is coming. And I think it'll be something that people will look forward to. It will be online, right? So for the preparation and lead up to the draft, the main thing I'm taking away is that they're not getting pro days and they're not getting the individual workouts. But you and I both know, as people have covered this league, whenever you start talking about pro days with somebody, they always tell you, well, we always refer to the tape anyway. And whenever you talk to about the combine, they always say, well, we always go back to the tape anyway. So at the end of the day, the quote-unquote uneasiness is out there. At the end of the day, if NFL teams always go back to the tape because they say tape don't lie, then does it really matter if they didn't get a pro day? Does it really matter if they didn't get bring in their 20 guys for those individual workouts, none of which they're going to draft because they don't want to tip off another team that this is a guy that we're interested in. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, that, you know, do you think it really has a major effect it going virtually and them not being able to do some of the things they used to do?
You know, you mentioned, you know, the conversation I was having with Jason Reed, who I really like, great NFL writer. And he said, you know, he's heard from so many front office executives that, boy, there's a chance that they're going to blow a lot of picks. And I almost, you know, in my mind, I get it. Look, you want to go through as much information gathering as you can. I get it. I do. But I also wonder, some of these teams are going to be better off kind of uncomplicating things. Like, this guy didn't come in and wow you during some pre-draft workout when his tape sucks. You know, like, it's you're going, again, maybe like, you know, to use a well-worn criticism, you know, maybe the Chicago Bears just look at Deshaun Watson's tape instead of all the other stuff and say, this kid can play football. What are we thinking about with Mitch Trubisky? Let's just draft Deshaun Watson. You know, maybe there's stuff like that that happens in this draft because there's not these extra layers this is what we saw pro day. This is what we saw. When sometimes, just watch the tape. Maybe that's okay. Maybe, and you still have a lot of, you know, your scouts have been to those schools. You have most of these guys, you see, saw them at the combine, which is a big thing, I think, just to get an idea of the athleticism of a guy. But I think for some of these teams, just to go back and say, we're going to be drafting this player based on his tape, and we didn't have pro day, we didn't have a pre-draft workout, maybe that's for the good. Maybe some of these teams are going to have a really good draft and go back and say, maybe this is the way we should be doing it. Maybe we're complicating things too much. And Jason didn't agree with me when we were discussing it. Hey, look, what he's saying is reasonable. There's going to be a lot less information for each of these teams on each of these guys, especially when you're talking mid rounds, late rounds, when, you know, maybe you don't have a ton of tape on somebody who was hurt and only played a few games. The Southern Illinois safety didn't play a ton of football. And he's moving, Jeremy Chin, he's moving up the charts. What do you do when you don't have as much information as you'd like on a guy like that? So I get it. There are some reasonable arguments, but it also seems to me, and I don't know if you agree with this, Anwar, but we've both covered the NFL, and it's part of me, my cynical side says, a lot of these general managers are leaking this out there. So when they do pick a bust, and they will, it happens, they can go back to the owner and say, look, we were all talking about this before the draft, the coronavirus thing. We didn't have the information. I would have made the right pick if I would have known. You know, it's almost like they're preemptively making these excuses for their bad picks.
Well, here's the thing, and to add into that, these people mess up the draft on perfect terms. I mean, absolutely. Just when everything's just perfect, where they can make their visits and bring in folks and still, you know, go through their due diligence and everything's perfectly laid out for them. You do a story every year, you know, about bus, draft bus.
Absolutely.
And all the millions of dollars and resources that they put into something. So, like, at this point, you can't tell me how this would be so bad for you. You kind of screwed it up beforehand anyway, right? So I'm not quite sure how your handicap, I think your point about simplifying things does make a lot of sense. So let me ask you a couple more. I'll let you get out. Since I am in Texas, you know, the great state of Texas here, let me ask you a question about the Cowboys.
Sure.
Your thoughts on the where this program is at this moment. Obviously, Dak gets the franchise tag. I've assumed, obviously, that there will be still the negotiations that are going on. It seems to be like they're far apart from reports, but we'll see how that goes. They re-sign Amari to a 5-year deal. He's got paid. You know, your thoughts on what the Cowboys have done so far in the offseason and what your thoughts of them overall?
Yeah, and I think they need a big draft because they lost a lot. They really did. I mean, you talk about Robert Quinn, and I know he got paid a ton of money, but he's still their sack leader. And Byron Jones got overpaid, but he's a very, very, very good player. And you just look at – I mean, some of the – just, you know, not maybe not the top-end guys even, but Randall Cobbs of the world, Travis Frederick retires, my guy from Wisconsin. It's they've just lost a lot of talent. And, you know, they went into this offseason saying, we're going to re-sign Amari and we're going to franchise Dak. That happened. Okay, great. That's the keys you needed to get, but that meant there was opportunity cost elsewhere, right? Like, you can't re-sign everybody. I think they've lost a lot. Now, who knows if, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, Jason Garrett was a problem and maybe there is a coaching upgrade there with Mike McCarthy. Okay. That's fair. And there still is a lot of high end talent. Of course, that's probably why they're having salary cap issues, because they're paying all these stars. But it's hard for me to look and say the Cowboys are a better team than they were a month and a half ago or whenever free agency started, just because a lot of talent went out the door, a lot of depth. They're going to have a big draft. They're going to need to, you know, replace Robert Quinn. They're going to need to draft multiple cornerbacks to replace what Jones gave them and fill some depth there. So the division's not great. I don't love the Eagles. I don't love the Giants. The Redskins are terrible. So I look and I say the Cowboys could still put it together, win a division, but I think this draft is huge for them just to fill in some depth that they lost in free agency.
Does Bill O'Brien hate the Texans?
What is going on?
What
is going on?
Is he a spy or for somebody?
Yeah, he's a mole, you know, just wrecking him from the inside. This is the true story. I've told this a lot when I do radio stuff. So, you know, our mutual friend Eric at home, we're on a work chat, right? And if we remember that trade, the first thing that broke was Arizona's trade of David Johnson to Houston, and we didn't know any other details. And Eric came on our work chat and said, I bet you it's one of those Brock Osweiler deals where the Cardinals have to give up a draft pick just for the Texans to take that contract. And I said, sure, that absolutely makes sense. And then 10 minutes later, it's like, oh no, the Texans gave up the best receiver in football. What? Like, what? Because he wanted a raise? Like, I am just floored by this. It's almost like they should have gone NBA style, where in the NBA, and people complain about this, but whatever. In the NBA, if your coach and your star player have a rift, the coach is going. He's gone. Like, you're not surviving if you go crosswise with LeBron James, because you know what? You could replace Tyronn Lue. You can't replace LeBron James. In the same vein, you can't replace DeAndre Hopkins. You could replace Bill O'Brien. I'll tell you that. You can. There's a lot of Bill O'Briens out there. So, I don't know, man. I think the Texans are just a weird franchise. They do win. I mean, I can't sit here and say they're, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars and they never win anything. They do pretty well in spite of some of the weird moves they make. But now it's just, oh, wow. I mean, they gave up 2 first-round picks for Tunsil, and so they don't have those to restock. It's just a weird scene over there, man. And that trade was just awful. Like, you could try to find me somebody who says that was a good trade.
Outside of the Brian household, I don't know if you'd be able to find anybody that says that. It's part of the frustration, I think, like here for, you know, Texans fans. It's one of those teams that they've been consistently good, right?
Yeah.
But you're looking to go up that next level. And of course, living in the shadow of the Cowboys, like no matter what they do, it'll always be overshadowed. Like a loss by the Cowboys will always be greater than a win by the Texans. So right. That's just how it is here. But for them to that, you know, you have like a guy in his prime with a young up and coming quarterback who, you know, is arguably going to be one of the best to not give that guy tools, right? You see what Kansas City does. Kansas City says, let's make sure Mahomes has tools. Like for years, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, they try to get him receiving tools. Like that's usually what you do. You build around your quarterback. Very rarely have we seen someone just take it away.
Yeah. And everybody, here's the problem, though. And the obvious next step is, oh, is Deshaun Watson going to leave? And I don't think so, because here's the debate I always have. Like, Deshaun Watson's going to reach a point in his career where the Texans come to him with a contract offer. And I believe by that point, it's probably going to be about $40 million a year. And that's what Mahomes is going to get. He's going to be in that neighborhood, right? So the Texans are going to say, you have two options, Deshaun. You take a five-year, $200 million deal, or we'll give you the franchise to take a $30 million. You pick. And it's all well and good for us to sit here and say, oh, Deshaun Watson needs to get out of there, take a stand, get away from the Texans. It's another thing to be gambling at $170 million, right?
Like, yes.
So I think it's just one of those deals where Deshaun has to be kind of beside himself. I love him as a player. I love watching him. I've loved him at Clemson. I love him at the Texans. But he has to be like Will Fuller. He's my number one. He's hurt all the time. Randall Cobb. Like, yeah, like 800 yards, and his last good year was 6 years ago at the Packers. Like, what are you doing for me here? I think Deshaun's going to outlast Bill O'Brien anyway, but at this point, Deshaun Watson's got to be shaking his head saying, you guys got to do a little more for me here. This is not going to work out for either of us.
So let's wrap it up with this subject here. I'm curious, as a guy who works at Yahoo, who has been there for a long time, I kind of want to know, how did Tom Brady outbid you for Derek Jeter's house? Like, I mean, like, how did that happen, dude? Like, how did you let that get away, dude? How did you let that get away?
You know, my family didn't want to downsize, man. couldn't get into the St. Jetersburg, I guess. Like, oh my God. Like, the whole Brady thing is fascinating. Just absolutely positively fascinating. Like, this dude, like, they came out with the new uniforms today, and they look really good, by the way. And it's just like people are like, oh, Brady jerseys are on sale, and tweeting pictures. And it was like, this is still so weird, man. Like, Tom Brady's going to be wearing pewter? Really? Like, this is how it's ending for this dude? Like, I can't even fathom
it. Is it Joe Montana in the Kansas City Chiefs uniform for you?
I hope it's that good. I really worry it's going to be Joe Namath with the Rams, where it's just a total debacle. Like, Montana was okay. Like, he was fine. He had a couple good jerseys with the Chiefs. I don't know, like a 43-year-old dude starting completely over with a new team, he's not going to have any offseason. Like, no matter how optimistic we want to be about games in September, I think we all know the offseason is going to be a little choppy. We're not going to get a regular offseason. And there's no history of 43-year-old or older quarterbacks doing anything in the NFL. I don't know. I've enjoyed Brady's career. I'm not one of these dudes who hates the Patriots. I don't care. I've appreciated and enjoyed his career, and I just hope, man, that this isn't going to be where it's October and the Buccaneers are like, wow, we got a 43-year-old quarterback. What do we do? Like, he's washed up. We can't. We got him for two more years. What? Well, how can we fix this? So it's really, really intriguing. And I'll tell you, like, they are the must-watch team of the NFL. And it's been a long time since I said that about the Bucs. Wow. Good or bad, it's gonna be really interesting to watch Brady's second act.
We gotta do research here. I don't have a calculator in front of me, but you know, Brett Favre towards the end, he had a decent year with the Jets.
Yeah, he was fourth. We're talking about 3 years. He had a good year with the Vikings.
Yeah, his first year with the Vikings, he was amazing. He was really over 4,000 yards.
That was his 40-year-old season, and great. I mean, and Tom Brady's 3 years older than that. If you go back and look. The only player who has started games at 43 or older was Vinny Testaverde. He was 44. I think it was the 2006 Panthers. He started six games and he was terrible. He had like a 69 rating, and that's it. Like, anybody
what about Steve DeBerg? Steve DeBerg?
He started one, yeah. I mean, I should say more than one, because there are a handful of guys who started one game, but none of them were successful. It's you look at the list of guys, you go to Pro Football Reference and do 43 and older for quarterbacks, and it's like, there's nothing here. There's nobody who's had any even remote level of success. So, but then again, the same was true for age 42, and Tom Brady had a good year, so at least decent. So I don't know, man. This is a if Brady can do it at age 43 with a new team, I don't know if there's any argument right now about who the greatest quarterback ever is, at least as far as resume goes. If he can somehow, like, the Buccaneers go like 12-4, win a division, and make a playoff run, like, it's over. Like, that, he has proven anything beyond any doubt. Mm-hmm.
What, you like the weapons, though? You like the weapons he's got in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I do. Godwin's so good. He's a great player. But the thing is, I like the weapons, but I don't know about the fit, because, you know, too, Bruce Arians wants to throw it deep. Like, he wants seven-step drop, stand in the pocket, throw it deep. Jameis threw more deep passes than anybody in the NFL last year, and that's not Tom Brady's game right now. And they're saying, you know, their general manager, Jason Licht, you know, he was on ESPN a couple weeks ago saying, Brady's arm is just fine for this. He's got an ideal arm for Bruce's offense. I'm sitting there saying, nothing really backs that up, Jason. I don't know if they're, like, telling themselves a story. Like, you know, you can kind of get swept up in this. It's Tom Brady. He's the GOAT. I don't know, though, man. I don't know that he could just take seven-step drops and fire deep to Mike Evans. So it might not matter that he's got good weapons if he can't function in the offense the way Bruce wants to run it.
Last question, and we've talked a lot about pros, and we talked about the pros and coronavirus, but you're a college football fan. You're a Wisconsin lover. I mean, you love yourself some college football. I went to Wisconsin grad. You know, I asked you this from a pro perspective. Obviously, we talked about testing, but, you know, the professional players at a certain given point, these are pros, right? They're getting paid.
Yeah.
Or they're not getting paid to risk their life, but we don't look down on the NFL or maybe Major League Baseball, for instance, and like if those guys go out, because at the end of the day, we're like, oh, they're professionals. The NCAA, these kids are amateurs. And we've talked about these kids being exploited and being used for years. From a college football perspective, what do you think would need to happen? What would you feel to be comfortable? You got college campuses across the country that are closed. I know UT, they're closed at least summer session one. What feels comfortable for you? The same rule applies as for when it comes to college athletes?
I think so. And it's going to be – look, we're dealing with this with the NFL too, but I think it's really going to be something different with colleges where – what if, okay, let's just talk Big Ten football, because that's, or let's go Big 12. Let's say Texas says all schools are open, UT opens after summer session one. What if Kansas doesn't? What if Iowa doesn't? And you know, all of a sudden it's like, well, what are we going to have? We're going to have half of a conference playing and half not? Like, are we going to get all 50 states? Like, I mean, or going to the Big Ten, like Wisconsin says, sure, we're open for business on campus. And Minnesota says, no, we're keeping our campuses closed. I mean, this is all stuff we're going to have to deal with. NFL-wise, it's stadiums. Does California allow football games to be played at stadiums, but New York doesn't, or New Jersey, I guess, doesn't, and we don't get the Giants and Jets? Like, I don't – there's so many balls in the air with this. It's hard to see where it all happens. And I do think that, yeah, when you're a college kid, you know, I don't know about if you're willing to say this, but I will. I was dumb when I was 21 years old. I wasn't in a mindset to make any. I'd be like, yeah, let's go play football. Sure. It's almost like they need somebody to tell them, no, this is dumb for you. Let's not do this. So I think it's going to be a lot of layers, but maybe more so with college than pros, just because you're dealing with a lot of different teams, a lot of different colleges, a lot of different, a lot of different players and different set of circumstances. An NFL guy could sign a waiver, right? Like Aaron Rodgers, to bring him up again. He can sign a waiver saying, yeah, if I get coronavirus, I'm not going to sue you. But is that going to be the case? Are they going to do that for college kids who aren't getting paid? Like, it's going to be a mess in college, I think. It's going to be hard to navigate all this, at least this season. I don't know. I hope it all works out because, I love college football. You love college football. I want to see the games, but that's an even trickier proposition than the NFL, I think. I think a lot of things are going to have to be worked through before we get to a point where everybody's on the same page and we're all having college football games in the fall.
Yeah, and the last thing on that, and this will be the last thing overall, the one thing that we both understand is college football brings in the money when it comes to all these athletic departments. Like, they need college football. College football, men's basketball, those are the money makers. Everybody else is about, every other sport is about the brand. Like, and it's no disrespect, but there aren't a lot of people going out to the golf matches or the tennis matches or anything like that. So how much pressure do these college ADs end up being under? Because you understand, you know, a couple of years ago, UAB shut down sports and that was just on a regular day. Without college football, I mean, you're talking about a trickle down effect of programs really having to eliminate athletics altogether. And you talk about even major programs. Yeah, they may make a lot of money, but they spend a lot of money. And if you're if you don't have football there, they lose a lot of money. I mean, how much pressure are these people going to be on to do something related to just to save their departments?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And, you know, I would assume anyway, the University of Texas is going to be fine. University of Wisconsin is going to be fine. The bigger, you know, because they bring in a lot of money. So you'd hope that, you know, they can manage this. But you think about somebody like, let's say, North Texas or whatever. You know, go to Georgia Southern or some school like that where, you know, they go play these bye games where they're getting, you know, $800,000-$900,000 for a game at Michigan or something. And that's a significant part of their budget for the whole year. What happens when they don't have that? What happens when they can't go to Notre Dame for a bye game, you know? And are they going to be able to survive? Are we going to see teams from Sunbelt and whatever just closing up shop saying, we went a year without any revenue for our programs, we can't do this again? I don't know. It's scary. I do believe that, you know, like I said, the bigger programs should be fine because, again, they're just more revenue, more avenues to make money. But yeah, you think about some of the smaller schools in D1, it's, you know, especially with when their football program is kind of carrying the load, or these, you know, in basketball, the SWAC teams who play 13 straight road games to start the year because that's their budget for the year. When you can't do that, what happens next? I think it's a very scary proposition for those type of schools.
Man, this was like the days we talked about before air, like when we were doing stuff on NBC Sports on the television stuff and just talking sports. I mean, like, I told myself, I'm going to be really conscious of his time. I know he's busy, so on and so forth. We went a little bit over, but man,
you got to make me a promise, man. We can't spend this much time without me being back on. I'm ready to anytime, dude. You're one of my dudes. One of my favorite guys in this business. It's fun to just talk, even though we're talking about stuff that is not necessarily the most fun stuff to talk about. It's still good to just, hey, let's talk some football. Let's talk let's talk some draft. Let's talk about anything, man. I can chop it up with you for forever, dude.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's, you know, again, because we do, it's COVID, but it is fun every once in a while to go back into that world. Back in February, where everything was okay and we didn't have to worry about it. We were watching press conferences for the president every day. We were, you know, dissecting, analyzing, and all these type of things. And I know more about Abbott Laboratories than I probably ever should. But yet, you will not be a stranger. You know, I got a really loyal following for your Drunk Uncle's Sports Podcast, I appropriately named. For Drunk Uncle, you know, so that's the name. I'm the Drunk Uncle. They love it. But yeah, we'll definitely have you back on maybe sometime after the draft or something like that. I don't want to overburden you. You're a big time guy. But I once again appreciate you having on and coming on and talking some football.
Absolutely, man.
All right, guys, that is it, man. Frank bought the heat. That's what the Drunk Uncle does. So listen, enjoy the rest of your week. Make sure you be safe. Stay your ass at home. If you ain't got somewhere to be, if it's not important enough to you, stay your ass at home. Be safe. Do some family activities. Do some stuff with the kids. Put them to bed. Have a drink because we know how they're stressing you out. One day we'll have school back. Until then, keep drinking that wine. And always remember what I say. Live each day like it was your last because one day it will be. We'll talk again soon.